Welcome back to The Positive View of Rural. This is Becky McRae, and with me today is Luther Snow. Luther, tell us a little bit about where you're from, where you're at, and I think that it would be great if you would just tell us a little bit about the asset-based approach, which is how you and I ended up meeting.
Great. Hi, Becky. Good to see you again. And so I'm Luther Snow. I live in Decorah, Iowa, which is a town in the northeast corner of the state. I've been living here about 20 years. Actually, I grew up in the inner city and started out doing work in inner city urban neighborhoods as a community organizer and a community economic developer. That's where I first got started with this asset-based approach. I was working with a couple of guys who became the pioneers of the whole asset-based community development movement. The guys named John McKnight and Jody Kretzman, actually another guy named Stan Hallett. And there was actually a whole group of us out there. And as a kind of a movement in certain parts of healthcare and social service and foundations and so forth, where people were saying, instead of us talking about our needs all the time, why don't we look at our assets, look at what we do have, and then we can use our assets to get things done. That makes sense. Well, after that had been going on for a while, the McKnight and Kretzman published a book that was extremely popular called Building Communities from the Inside Out, and the whole asset-based language and movement started to spread to some different fields. All their stories were inner city stories, and our family moved to Iowa when my wife got a job teaching at a small liberal arts college here in called Luther College, coincidental. So I get shirts and hats. Rural folks were saying to McKnight and Kretzman and the ABCD Institute, Asset-Based Community Development, you know, your message is really rural and your stories are all urban. Why don't you do a rural version? And they said, well, that's a good idea. And, well, who could do that? Because we don't know anything about it. And they said, didn't Luther move to Iowa? Yes, he did. So they got me hooked up with the Blandon Foundation in Minnesota, rural Minnesota, up in Grand Rapids. And we published a book called The Organization of Hope, a workbook for rural asset-based community development. And we had a committee of rural practitioners from around the country, fascinating rural places, small towns in Minnesota, but also we covered the Colonias in the border between Mexico and New Mexico, and we covered the Gullah communities in the sea islands and coastal communities of South Carolina, and the fishing industry in Maine, and Kentucky and Appalachian community development. And the message through all of it was, here are communities that are taking an asset-based, what you and I would call a positive approach to rural community. When the book came out, we discovered, as we started then going around to gatherings and associations and organizations of people, that this was, I don't know, mid-late 90s, that the whole rural development field was pretty much caught in a death spiral. It was all negative, right?
Yeah.
Oh, everything is going to hell in a handbasket in rural communities. We're obsolete. We're shrinking. We're dying. We have to change or die. And there were you know, big shot legitimate people. I remember going to a speech by a guy from the Federal Reserve Board talking to a bunch of rural folks like me, just basically telling us that we might as well hang it up, you know, just that was his economic message for us. And so our book came out at that time, and we were saying just exactly the opposite. We were saying, actually, ruralness is a strength. Ruralness has qualities about it that make it really valuable and really worth building on. So we were part of then, I think, a shift in our field and our movement and in rural communities generally toward what I then started to call positive rural development movement. And so I was so glad to meet you when I was doing, it was a webinar for Northwest. It was organized by Washington State, and there was something for several states, and even I think British Columbia for that. And those are folks that have been doing some good rural stuff. And we have colleagues and people of like mind around the country who believe that ruralness is a strength, and by taking a positive approach to rural development, we can do better than we can with the old need-based approach.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm hoping to draw in a lot of those voices for this series so that we can share those ideas, and that the people that are, I feel like, people that are working in small towns right now that are just a business owner, or they're somebody that just somebody who cares about their community. These people are by and large positive about their community. They feel like they have some things to offer, and they also feel like they're kind of the only person in the world with this viewpoint. You know,
that's I'm
the only one beating my head against this brick wall of trying to work with our community and having a positive outlook and seeing all the great things that we could be. And so I want to give them a chance to hear from other people that feel the same way and connect people across distance so that people know they're not the only person in the world with this crazy idea in their head.
I love it. I love it. I'm so supportive of that idea. And I know that such a network of people already exists, and I don't know that there's any other vehicle like this for bringing us together. So thank you, Becky, for helping us to do that.
Well, and networked people is one of the key concepts that you talk about, because we're rural, we connect people that way. But I wanted to talk, and I think the good example to use for that would be your work with the North Slope Alaskan Villages. I think that you, as you talked about the outsider view and the insider view of that, it was so familiar because it's the same kind of outsider view, insider view that we've seen with towns in Oklahoma and everywhere else, you know, that they're stuck up there, there's no opportunity, those poor people in those little towns.
Right.
And then you get there and they don't see themselves that way at all. And that was, we could have just struck out Alaska and put in Oklahoma and it would have been same story.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. And I mean, ruralness is relative, right? What it means to be rural on the East Coast is different from what it is in the middle of the country, and then it's even more different up in the Northwest. They say in the Northwest, they say we're frontier, because I mean, frontier makes rural look urban, right? But I mean, it's also a mindset, isn't it? Basically, rural means we're spread out. I mean, we would have lots of definitions, like, do you have a stoplight on your street, or, you know, I think to do is basketball game at the high school on Friday night. But when you think about it, really, I mean, rural means spread out. And in our society, we have an assumption. It's really an urban bias. And this was interesting for me to learn coming from the inner city and moving to a small town. I didn't realize I had an urban bias, and that's because it's so pervasive you don't even know it's there, right? And we assume that for things to happen there has to be concentration, that we have to have economies of scale, to be piled up on top of each other in order to be effective and efficient and valuable. And those things do exist, right? I mean, Walmart is successful because of economies of scale, and that's true. But there are other things that are more successful because we're spread out. The two kinds of businesses that they have they have the largest number of businesses, or in the top 10 or something like that. One is basically rocks, quarries and sand and asphalt and all that. There are more of those kind of businesses. Well, if you think about it, it makes sense. It's hard to truck, you know, gravel across the country. You should dig it up where you got it, right?
So yeah, exactly.
Lots of small companies that are spread around. The other one was plastic injection molding, like milk bottles. It wouldn't make sense to ship milk bottles all the way across the country. You should make them in different places. So there are economies of being networked across distance. And the way that we as rural people have figured out how to get things done when we're spread out, I think turns out to be a really important economic skill, a really important value in our whole society. If you think about it, globally, we're connected to people spread out all over the world now. Some people say that makes the world smaller. In fact, it makes the world larger because it means that our lives are being impacted by people further away than they used to be. So I think that rural skills are, you know, not obsolete at all. I think they're central to the global economy and to where we're going as a world. So you mentioned the Alaska thing, and it's just a useful example. I haven't done a ton of work up there, but just the experience of my involvement there it helps me because, you know, when you look at, sometimes if you look at even an extreme example, it can teach you something about your own example. So like you said, you cross out Alaska and put Oklahoma, or you could describe Oklahoma, cross that out, put Iowa. I could describe Iowa, cross that out, and put Western Massachusetts or something, right? So you get a sense of that. I did go and do some work with the Inupiat peoples. The Inupiat is one of the tribes, one of the families of native indigenous people in Alaska. And this particular group is in the North Slope. So that's like the very top of Alaska. It's actually in the Arctic Circle in part. And most of the villages are on the coast. Be a village of 300 people and be about 300 miles to the next one. So that's how spread out they are. Okay? That's pretty spread out. And inland, it's, you know, there's like two or three villages for all the rest of the area. And I went there in March. And it was, to get there, you get on a little prop plane. First, you fly to the big city of Barrow, maybe as big as my town in Iowa, right? And that's the capital of the district. You take a little prop plane, and half the plane is full of supplies. You're taking out the seats, and then there's like a few seats left. Actually, there's a TV show up there, Fly Wild Alaska or something like that. So on one of my trips, there was a video camera that they were taking pictures of the pilot because of something. And it was the middle of winter, so it was just completely white. And so we were flying along the coast, but you couldn't tell because there's ice 5 miles out into the ocean. When I got there, it was 45 below zero. 45 below zero. But you know, I got a mask and I got my long johns and I had my down and wool and everything I could get. The people in that region have survived over the eons through sustenance living. Yes, living off the land is what we would call it. A lot of it is fish and whaling. Big whales and the beluga whales. Not a whole lot of vegetation, but berry picking and that sort of thing. And they've survived that way. And then when was it? Less than 20 years ago, 15 years ago, was the big oil discovery up in the bay up there. What happened was they struck this compromise that allowed that the oil companies could drill for oil in the Prudhoe Bay, but that the indigenous people of the area would own it and, I guess, get royalties. They would take a tax off the top. So that's what funds the schools and the county, the government kind of functions, and the college that they have, some health care. And then each of the families also gets a small check. I guess how small? It's under $10,000 per person. But if you put that together for a family of four, that's pretty decent. The leaders of that community are concerned about the future, because that oil is not going to be pumping at the same rate forever. And that's sort of true of the global economy, isn't it? So and that's why it's a microcosm in a way. And so they wanted to encourage entrepreneurship and work. People are used to being sustenance, not really getting a paycheck, but living hand to mouth. And then there's this import of wealth through the natural resources. But what they wanted to do is say, well, how can we create our own jobs, our own businesses in our communities? That sound familiar? We would all like to do that, right? Well, and the message I kept getting from some of the leaders was that, our people don't understand this. They don't get entrepreneurship. They're rural. They're spread out. They're becoming dependent on these checks or whatever. And so we're going to have to teach them this, and we'll have to teach them by teaching them this asset-based approach, right? So that's a good way to try to get through to people. So will you come and do that, Luther? And I said, okay, yeah, I'll do that. When I got there, I found out it was just exactly the opposite. It was exactly the opposite. It was the most entrepreneurial community I have ever seen. It's take any group of 300 people. How many of them are going to be entrepreneurs? Not so many. But these people were just hungry to start businesses, because if you're in a community of 300 people, you see all sorts of opportunities right there in front of you, don't you? Oh, I need this and you need this, and we put that together, we become customers for a cooperative business, some sort of an import-export kind of a thing, some way of developing our culture and using that as a way of producing income while also advancing kind of the mission of our tribe and that sort of thing. So I was just astounded by the level of interest among local residents in different kinds of entrepreneurial activities. I really feel like that kind of spirit and interest is there in every rural community. The trick is for folks to figure out how to make that work, right? And it's never a problem of having demand. It's usually a problem of having enough demand to make it a critical mass, right? So if you wanted to right now, you could start a business in your town. What's a business you don't have in your town? Have you got a mattress store?
I'm trying to think. I don't think you can buy a mattress in Alva, which is the nearby big town of almost 5,000 people.
That's the nearby big town, right?
Yeah.
So we had in our town, we had a little bookstore.
Ooh.
That's good because, yeah.
I want a bookstore, yeah.
I know, but it wasn't making a living. It wasn't a market. There wasn't enough market to pay for a bookstore.
Right.
So they said, well, but people can't buy mattresses. So on the second floor, we'll open a mattress store, right? And I can think, what's the connection between those things? I could only think, reading in bed.
Lay down and read in bed. This is perfect, And I'll throw you another one, which was, we just said mattress store, bookstore. You could take the bookstore. And my sister and I were just saying, it was a great night last night, and we had picked up our dinner, and we So there should be like a little bistro that has like little sidewalk tables. We should have been able to go and have dinner and a glass of wine on the sidewalk downtown during the, you know, the 2 weeks a year when it's wonderful and gorgeous out.
Right. Right.
So you tuck that to a bookstore. Those are, that's perfect. See, there you go.
It's so this is what we have to do. We have to sort of combine different things. So instead of economies of scale, it's more like diversification. To make a business work, you have, this is why, you know, the company store, the town store had a little bit of everything. Because you needed to be able to have something, but you couldn't, it couldn't just be lattes. It had to be lattes, books, and mattresses, right? In order, in order for it to work. So we have to think a little creatively about that with the physical stores. But I also think that we learn to network across distance to get business done. So, I mean, cooperatives took hold in this country in rural areas, right? I mean, there's urban cooperatives, but where's the electric co-ops? Rural areas, right? Where are the mutual insurance companies? There's the Norwegians and the Germans and the, you know, every different immigrant group had their own kind of cooperative insurance thing. And I think there the idea is that you have individual business units, entrepreneurs, an insurance agent, or a farmer, in the case of a grain co-op, say. So then if we pool our resources, then we can have a silo, or we can have a livestock marketing cooperative or something like that. But we're still independent businesses, independent actors in rural community. We're entrepreneurial. We're responsible for our own thing. We're independent in a way, in the way a farmer is independent or a rancher is independent. But we're stronger by being networked across distance. Yes? And I think that's really a rural business model, being networked across distance. I don't think we necessarily recognize the extent to which we already have that in place and the significance of it. Some of us do. I mean, no, co-ops are really important. But I do think, again, that's a global economic model. That's the way things are getting done now. Big companies don't just have one big factory in a place now. They've got sites all over the world and supplies coming from here and design over here. And you know, they've got a network across distance to get something manufactured, let alone information technology. And that's what rural communities have been doing for years. I think we just need to think about, can we do that in some new ways today to create new economic opportunities for tomorrow? Do you see network kind of activity in Oklahoma?
I do. We have, there's two things that I can point to that are coming from outside in terms of networks. One is that the Department of Commerce has been trying to work with all of the regions of Oklahoma. They took Oklahoma, which is a good-sized state, and just chopped it in four and said, okay, all of you Northwest people, which is my corner of the state, all, I don't even remember how many counties this adds up to. I want to say it's 18 or something, and these are good-sized counties. I mean, this
big
is
counties.
Big counties, and no people. This is the other secret, is it's a lot of territory and not a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Not Alaskan North Slope quality of spread out, but we're, you know, compared to the rest of Oklahoma, we are rural. We're and many of our areas do qualify as frontier. In fact, I'm about 10 miles from frontier where I sit right now.
Is that right?
Yeah. By the latest set of definitions that changes weekly. So, you know, the state is working on it, and then the Cooperative Extension Service is working on a regional project as well, trying to encourage some regional economic planning and development together.
Sure.
These are both outside in kind of things. You know, we're going to make those people, you people will, you know, comply with our regional plans. But I see, you know, stealing some of your stuff. I steal your stuff all the time. I want you to know this. Urban bias. I use this all over. I have to say, urban bias, thanks to Luther Snow, urban bias. But the internal, the networks that we form naturally, and I can steal this entire list from you because I hadn't thought about these as useful, functional networks until I heard you talk about them. But if you look at sports teams, all of our little towns get together and we connect through our sports teams. And parents end up knowing other parents in other towns. Kids know other kids in other towns because they compete in sports. And that's all of our sports, and we do a lot of different sports. So there's a lot of those connections.
Right. Yep.
So
let's just take that one.
Okay.
For a minute. Okay. So and then let's go back to like the Department of Commerce or the Co-op Extension and say, what can we learn about how we might support and encourage, even from outside, but especially from inside, new network development to take advantage of some of the kinds of things that we see going on. Now, if you ask the average rural resident about networks that they're involved in, no. We're independent and on our own. And if you say, well, what about that nearby town? Those people, their basketball team beat our basketball team. We're enemies. We're rivals, let's put it that way, for life, right? And remember that game back in 56 when the ref blew the call and, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? So there's all that that goes on. But then if you think about it, what makes it possible for those two towns to even play a game, right? If we were independent on our own, we could never play each other, right? We could only play games in our own town. It's only because we network across distance that then we can do something that's better for both towns, right? And maybe there's six or seven or however many, I don't know how many are in your school leagues or whatever. But then we become a whole that's larger than the sum of its parts. We become a network where each party contributes and each party gains as part of something bigger. Hmm? We have this going on already in our communities. And so it isn't like, let's teach rural people from the outside how to do this. It's let's remember that we have developed these kinds of systems over generations. Can we now take that and apply it and do it some more? Tourism is a good example. I think it's probably true that tourism was more independent over the years. If there was a town, if they had a big statue of a cow or something like that, that was the big draw for the town, right? But now, if people are thinking regionally about tourism, can we say, look, is it good for your town if more tourists come to my town? Well, yeah, because then they might find out about stuff that's going on over there. And maybe we can have a little map of where different things are in the region. We can have a lot of places have a wine trail now. I'm working in West Virginia lately, and there's this is becoming really famous now, the Hatfield-McCoy Trail.
Sure.
It's basically ATV dirt roads is what they are, but it's a tourism thing, and it's regional because it's connected across distance, but each stop along the way then adds to the value of the larger network. And the better the network gets, the more popular that trail, the more popular the region that you're in, the better that is for each town or community within the region, and the better each community does, the better that is for the whole network. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I call an open sum dynamic instead of a fixed sum. Fixed sum means my gain is your loss. You win the basketball game, I lose the basketball game. Open sum is my gain is your gain is our gain. So our team basketball gets better, your team basketball gets better, our league gets better, that's better for each of our teams, and the better our teams get, the better that is for the net. Thinking about business and community development in that way opens us up, I think, to some new ways of thinking about some of the stuff that we've been doom and gloom about in rural communities in the past.
I think one of the other things I wanted to bring up is something that you had brought up in the webinar was all those different kinds of networks that we have right now that we never see and we never think about. There's, you mentioned rural fire. The rural fire guys all go for training at the same place. They know each other across distance. They're all connected. The scouting organization covers multiple counties out here, and those scout leaders know each other. They all go together to the same events. They're all connected at the same trainings. And then we have sports, and we've talked about school connections that way.
Churches
is a big one. They cover a lot of territory, get connected over distance.
Yeah.
I know that there's regional business trainings, and you'll see some of the same business owners in the same places and are connected that way. I think that this is something that we do a lot more of than we get any credit for when you see all the outside in kind of work going, well, we really need to teach them how to, you know, get them folks to straighten up. But what we really see is that we do a lot of this. We just don't do a lot of it for the same purposes as the state is looking at. And I think that one of the ideas that's percolating in my head that hasn't gone anywhere yet is that we have to do a better job, especially now that we have the ability to do this online, we have to do a better job just exchanging news, just casual news. Better connection across. It occurred to me after the big blizzard that hit here and destroyed some buildings in Alva, I didn't know how much it had affected our neighbors in Fairview, which is just an hour away, you know, and so it occurred to me, because that had to get filtered through the Oklahoma City news and then reflected back to us.
We just got
to connect to each other and share even that kind of news so that we just know what's going on in our communities across the distance. We tend to not take those steps of exchanging that kind of update with each other. Like I said, that's just one of these ideas that's percolating in my head. I think it's something that we can all do, a little deliberate connecting with people that are in our nearby communities that are not just right here in our hometown.
Well, and again, I think that's a rural skill. What the sociologists say about rural areas is that I think that where they say is it's we're multiply interpolated.
Love those words.
That's a Pensant word. What that means is that we connect with the same people in different ways. Mm-hmm. So when I lived in Chicago, I had neighbors, and I was close with my neighbors. People say, oh, you don't know your neighbors in the city. Baloney, I knew my neighbors, and we were friends, so I knew them pretty well. But then it didn't turn around that then when I went to the grocery store there, they were the checkers. And it didn't turn out that then the same person who lived next door to me also was in church with me. And it didn't turn out then that we were both parents on the same school sports league or whatever. In small towns and in rural communities, we take different roles and we connect with each other in some different ways. So if we would treat some of these networks the same way, we could say, well, we're already networked, say, as a basketball league. Could we build on that to do something where we would be sharing more news and information as a region? So, like off the top of my head, well, we're going to go to the basketball game. It's going to be an hour. It's going to be a long drive, right, to the next town, to that town, right? What if, you know, when all those people came to that game, what if there wasn't a little, what's the name of your town, Alva?
Alva, yeah.
Alva. What if we had a taste of Alva at the basketball game? Right? So, in other words, we think we're just there for basketball, but couldn't we be there for economic development and entrepreneurship? Couldn't we say, you know, discover all that there is to enjoy about Alva as long as you're here for that. And then when we go to your town, we have a taste of, you know, Crisco or whatever it is, and it can build on it that way.
Yeah.
If you wanted to support entrepreneurs in a rural community, you could say, well, let's have a thing at the Chamber of Commerce. Well, what about having a thing at the church? What about having a thing at the school? What about having, you know, something that has to do with the Scouts or the Lions Club or one of these other networks that already exists, so that you could say, well, here's a person who is an entrepreneur. Here are some people who might be customers. Here are some people who might be suppliers. here are some businesses that are similar that could go in together on a larger contract. Here are some businesses that are different from each other and could be part of a, you know, a larger kind of a business plan or something like that. If we build on some of the networks that we already have but use them in some different ways, then we might be taking advantage of the assets of rural community to, you know, create new opportunities for us in the future.
Exactly. And I think that I think that's a good place to wrap up for today, because yeah. I know from past experience when you and I start on this, on a positive view of rural, that we have lots to say.
I think so too, and I like the fact that you're doing this series, and I would like to be a regular on your series. How's that sound?
Well, okay. I think we can arrange that.
Do some more interviews, and then and you and I can chat and debrief about some of them or something.
How's I think so. I think I think you'll be on more than once. I think you can just plan. Just open some time on your calendar. That's what I'm saying.
And let's get, and you know, as we can get the word out to folks. If you're listening, folks, be a part of this network. You know, see if there isn't a way that you could plug into what Becky's doing, and Becky can plug into what I'm doing. And we can be our own rural network for a positive rural community.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much. I'm so glad you made time to talk to me today, Luther. I appreciate it greatly.
I always enjoy everything we do together, Becky. So thank you for your leadership in this field. Woo.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.